Jacksonville looks towards a new convention center, but more troubles for the new district development. Meanwhile, Amazon says no thanks to Jacksonville as other cities get its attention. And it's at least one more Sunday of Go Jags as Duval takes on the Patriots up in Foxborough. Some of these stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Another chilly morning out there. Hope you're warming things up with us. And we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and the WJCT app. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, it's a brand new portal for millennials and others looking for hot pads in the booming rental market and developed right here on the First Coast. We'll tell you all about Trentals.com, all of that ahead this morning. But first, it's Friday and time for our weekly media roundtable. A very busy news week to discuss as we welcome Dan Scanlon, reporter with the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning.
WJCT business analyst John Burr is here.
Hey, Melissa.
Good to see you. And making his debut on the media roundtable, John McGowan, new columnist for the Beaches Leader. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here, guys. Lots to talk about this Friday. Everything from the city hiring a law firm to sue opioid manufacturers to just about everybody in town jumping on the Jaguars bandwagon. There's a little game on Sunday. You might have heard about that. And more news to talk about. But our top story this morning, business and development news galore this week. We're going to start with the latest move to bring a new convention center to downtown Jacksonville. Did you hear about this? The Downtown Investment Authority this week issued a request for proposals, trying to see if they could attract a private developer who might be interested in building a brand new hotel and convention center on the current site of the old County Courthouse and City Hall Annex on Bay Street. Now, those buildings have been closed since 2012, but plans to tear them down and build a convention center there go back to when voters first approved the Better Jacksonville plan some 18 years ago. The big question is, can Jacksonville find a developer willing to jump into such a massive project? So we begin the roundtable with this question to callers. What do you think of this plan to build a splashy new hotel and convention center there on Bay Street, right near the Hyatt Hotel? Do you think this is good for downtown? What are your thoughts about this? The number to join the roundtable as we talk about the biggest stories of the week, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can also weigh in on our Facebook page. John McGowan, let's begin with you. I noticed you talking about this on social media this week. Jacksonville saying we need more convention center space to attract bigger conventions, build up our downtown. Urban core advocates, business types have wanted this for years. What do you think?
Well, we joked earlier about how many hats I wear. One of the hats I wear is I actually put on an event downtown. Uh-huh. And I can. This was when I first started putting that event, I realized how small our convention center was. We talk about it in abstract, but the reality is we're just slightly bigger than Tallahassee as far as our convention center. And we're missing out on
at the Prime Osborne.
And we're missing out on so much business from that. And the lead letter in the Times Union today, which was written by a very smart guy, that was mine.
That was yours.
I covered some of these parts because, you know, if you look at Miami, they have 500,000 square feet of convention center space. You look at Orlando, it's 2.1 million square feet of convention center space. And we're having a debate over doing 240,000 square feet of convention center space. But what the investment authority is proposing is a more traditional path for this. The city doesn't have to do this on our own, but we keep looking at making this. The city has to spend money and build a new convention center. We don't have to get rid of the Prime Osborne to do this. You know, if you go to Las Vegas, all their convention centers, yeah, there's one owned by Las Vegas, but the hotels are for the convention centers. And, you know, the Sands and all those, they're privately owned, they're hotels, and they have a large amount of space. And I think this is an innovative way to do this. And I think we keep looking at, we've got to get rid of the Prime Osborne and do this, but why not have both? I think the Prime Osborne is just an over-glorified community center anyhow. I mean, if you look at what goes on down there, we're not bringing in conventions, we're bringing in local events that are just attracting people from Jacksonville. If we can get something larger, we can bring in people from outside, and the Prime Osmoor can still exist for those small local events.
What about the idea of reconstituting the Prime Osborne in its original purpose, a transportation hub? John Burke.
Well, the convention center hasn't worked, so yeah, I think that makes a little more sense. However, you do have a lot of space at the Prime Osborne just to make it a train station and a bus station. It's, you know, it's got way too much space for that. You know, the whole idea of the convention center downtown has popped up several times in the last 20 years and really hasn't gotten anywhere. You know, the key to this whole thing is what you said, Melissa. You've got to find private investors.
That's right.
Who think they can make money off of building a convention center in downtown Jacksonville. It has nothing to do with what the DIA says or how the Times Union editorializes about it or anything else. It's all about finding that private investment. And if that isn't forthcoming, you know, it's a pipe dream.
Yeah. Now, the DIA seems to have enough confidence, Dan Scanlon, to put an RFP out in the field. Will they attract bids? Well, that's the question.
I think it's a whole package deal here. Obviously, if you drive down that section of West Bay Street, East Bay Street, West Bay Street, all you see are empty lots where a shipyard used to be. You see the remains of the Berkman II that have not been developed. You see a rusty old flagpole in front of the old courthouse and old annex. So anything there is better than what's there right now. It is so dead that even in the morning when I'm going by, the one restaurant that's open there has barely anybody there. So yes, if you have the shipyards by Shad Khan coming in, if you get the USS Adams in to draw people in, and then they say, hey, we
the
need
Navy
a place to stay.
The Navy ship that the right. folks want to convert to a museum.
Right. Instead of an old wharf with some construction debris on it, then you suddenly start getting people coming in. My dad used to run a major hotel in New York City. The one thing I remember him telling me was, if your ballroom isn't filled every day, you're losing money. So you have to have people who want to come here, want to stay in a hotel, and want to have a convention here from Chicago, San Francisco, New York City.
John McGowan, yesterday on this program, we talked about how a convention center is sort of like, the analogy was made, it's like the milk in the grocery store. It's not sexy, but it gets people in the door, and then maybe they'll go out to some other bars and restaurants.
Well, I think people really underappreciate what convention business means, because most conventions are not things that you even are aware they're taking place. They, you know, there was one in Orlando a few years ago, and it was, I don't remember the type of doctor, but it was a special type of doctor. They brought in 40,000 doctors from all over the country, and they would come down. They stayed for a week. They spent money. They had to eat, and it was just an extra 40,000 people that were thriving in that part of Orlando by the convention center. And I think that's really the spark for what can help downtown is bringing those people, infusing them into downtown. They've got to eat. They've got to stay at a hotel. And as that starts and the conventions are taking place and people are at the conventions, the business around it grows because then there's suddenly a demand. And that's always a problem with downtown is there's no demand for the services. We want the services, we want the food, but it's a chicken and the egg. People aren't going down there, so nobody's going to invest in a restaurant. And if you put a restaurant down there, there aren't any people down there to keep it going. And people aren't going because there's no restaurant. And we just keep going round and round and round.
Right. This could create some demand, theoretically.
Yeah, it could. And, if we're talking about a convention center in Duval County, and you're looking at those people from Chicago and New York and Philadelphia and points north that you want to attract to Jacksonville for a convention, I think it makes a lot more sense to put a convention center in Jacksonville Beach at the beach instead of on the St. John's River downtown.
What does our Beaches Leader columnist think about that?
I don't
John McGowan.
The reality is we just don't have the space out there. If we were to put it out at the beach, we're built out at the beach. The space that's oceanfront, the space that's out there, it's a lot of residential. We just wouldn't have the space for it.
Unless you tore something down.
Yeah, but I...
And that would create that's another kettle of fish, isn't it?
Yeah, there's some parking lots on the beach, if I can recall.
There is, but we also have a height limit out there. You can't build over three stories.
Right.
So the parking lot that's available there can only go up to three stories. And so it would require another referendum by the voters to eliminate that and make that change.
I'm just talking about the target audience, okay? People want to come to Florida for a convention. Part of a convention is having fun. I think most people from up north, especially this time of year, would love to have fun on a sandy beach in Florida rather than on the banks of the St. John's River.
Mm. You know, that's an interesting point, and I take both of your points. Your point, John McGowan, that it's probably not realistic to put the center there, but at the same time, as you say, John Burr, people coming from up north don't realize that Jacksonville is not on the ocean. I had friends come visit me years ago, and they booked rooms at, I think it was the Omni, and they didn't realize till they got here that the Omni was not on the ocean.
Almost 20 miles away.
and then they got here and they were really upset. And I kept telling them, don't go to that hotel if you want to be oceanfront. And they just didn't get it until they physically got here and they saw the layout. That people don't get it till they get down here. They just don't grasp the concept of a city in Florida that's not oceanfront. People don't understand how this city could have not been built on the ocean.
You know, 30 years ago, more or less, the Ritz-Carlton was built on Amelia Island, and we all looked at each other and said, who wants to go to Fernandina Beach and hang out at a grand hotel? Then the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance was there, making it a destination event, and now you've seen the amount of development that's gone on around that area, and now the millionaires and the people who come for the Concours come back because they've got this lovely chunk of historic Florida that's got beaches, that's got restaurants, and Jacksonville if they want to visit, or Georgia. And so, again, it's the old saw. You need something to draw a person in. In that case, it was a hotel that then drew events in. But we don't have a lot of events on the river. We've tried so many events on the river, including high-speed boat races. They have failed. There's nothing on the river. Only the Riverwalk now is the newer jewel of that waterway. Now, obviously, if the district gets built across the street, if the shipyards gets built, if the convention center gets built, my gosh, you've got
the Jaguars
a river.
Win the Super Bowl.
Well, we'll talk about that.
And we'll talk about all of those in a minute.
Then the riverfront.
You're getting ahead of yourselves, guys.
Then the riverfront becomes a place to go.
Let me go to a few calls here on the Friday Roundtable. 549-2937 to join us. Mary is in Avondale right now. Hi, Mary. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
All right, thanks. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you for having me on the air. I just wanted to comment and say I'm anti-against the continuing push to move everything to the beach. I lived downtown for 3 years and did my best to try to promote and encourage people to come into the city. If you've been in the area, the Prime Osborne is located way far away from the hub. So I think building something such as a convention center right in downtown would be phenomenal. It would attract business, and it would bring people back into the community. So let's push it. Bring some money to Jacksonville so we can grow.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mary. Thanks for that. 549-2937. Calls from all over the listening area this Friday. Mark is in St. Augustine. Hey, Mark, what are your thoughts?
Good morning. I just want to let you know, I go to, through my job, I attend quite a few conferences. And whenever we go to different towns, we don't have a whole lot of excess free time that you can go out and really enjoy the amenities that a city has to offer, other than maybe a nice dinner at night or maybe some type of a show. So that being said, y'all were talking about putting it at the beach. I just can't imagine, you know, a conference attendee coming in town and having a whole afternoon off to pack a swimsuit and go get some rays on the beach. And I also think sometimes cities just weren't meant to be a conference destination, and I don't have a problem with that. However, I do think if there was some type of an attraction downtown that was world-class, that was really, you know, top-notch, for example, and it doesn't have to be this, but an aquarium. Man, you got to go to Jacksonville, and you have to see the aquarium that they have there. I think if you had some type of a draw other than just a convention center, I love our downtown. It's beautiful down there, and I know there's some great restaurants and stuff. But just because we can make a a convention center doesn't necessarily mean that we have to do that or that that's the best choice for our city.
All right, yeah, thanks for that, Mark. What about his points? John McGowan.
Well, he's right that people that come to a convention, they're going to spend most of their time in the convention center, but they're if the people that show up to the convention are there for the convention. A lot of people, you know, I think there's a reality that people go to these conventions and then find ways to sneak out. I don't know if that's a secret, but people sign up, the company sends them to them, and they find a way to sneak out.
And do other things.
But yeah. They also sometimes they bring their families and turn into a vacation. So you've got that add-on of what's the family doing while this person's in the convention center. But even if it's just as much as them going out to dinner at night, remember, we're not talking about the convention center being the sole driver for downtown. It's just a piece of it. And he's right. The aquarium, the other things can add to it. This is just a starting point and one of many starting points.
And how are we going to get an aquarium, John Burr, Dan Scanlon, if we are still debating if we can get the funding for a convention center?
Well, isn't the aquarium idea now pretty much a dead fish? I mean, literally.
I haven't heard anything about that.
Obviously, the shipyards would have a lot of recreation. It would have the practice fields. There would be a desire that if you're in here town for a conference, you can go watch the Jaguars practice. You can go visit the USS Adams. You can maybe have dinner on the waterfront. And suddenly it becomes I do want to bring my family. I do want to add that larger room at the hotel, which is right here next to the convention center. And then suddenly your money is getting spent and your family's having fun.
Right. And, you know, we're about 20 years behind on the aquarium idea. You know, a lot of cities have aquariums now and they all great. And they all cost about $25 to get into. And I just think we're too late on that idea. It really does boil down to, are there a set of investors out there who think that they can make money off of a convention center in Jacksonville?
We'll soon find out, won't we? We'll see what the bids look like.
You know, and really, that's what it all boils down to. And, you know, we can have these debates forever, but if there's nobody out there who thinks they can make money building a convention and running a convention center in Jacksonville, that's about it.
And, you know, they've tried for years to put a hotel next to the Prime Osborne. That never worked. Now it's all condos. And now, thankfully, the Brooklyn area next door is growing. But if you were to make it an Amtrak hub again, much better than the one on the north side, the rest of the space could be office and conference for those who come in on the train and meet there and make it a multi-purpose hub.
Jason in Riverside emails the show, we should invest in our city and our citizens. We should attract businesses permanently and not allow them to take the money and run. All right, let's go to Michael on the south side. Hi, Michael. Good morning. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I went to the University of Florida Park after school. I don't practice anymore, but when I was there, one of our studios was Jacksonville Convention Center. Our site was around the stadium. It worked out that way. But the city should realistically take the opportunity with the great architecture schools that are in the state of Florida and reach out to USF, and let the students make it a project. Have the city fund it. It's not that much money. I know when my wife was at MIT, developers and cities got studios. They paid for them. It was, you know, $5,000-$10,000 investment. It wasn't much. It paid for the travel for the students to come. And in the end, the city's got, or the developers, they can ship the designs. And you're getting stuff that professional architects, they're looking at codes and this and that. And students start to push boundaries. And it might not be buildable, but it's something that's thinking differently. And it gives opportunity for a city to look, I hate to use the term outside the box, but it really is. And we had wonderful designs we came up with. We're using international and national guidelines for convention centers. And we had a hotel. We had transportation, all of this, and it just begs the question of, you know, constantly asking about, oh, is it a developer make money? But realistically, convention centers can also be loss leaders done by a city. Look at D.C.'s convention center, completely revitalized the northeast section of D.C., and that's just, why not take that opportunity?
Sure, yeah, thanks for that. That's Michael on the south side. Thanks for that call. And if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable as we take a look back at the biggest stories of the week. The number to join the show, 549-2937. Well, as plans seem to move forward on a new convention center for downtown, meanwhile, it's back to the drawing board for the project across the river from the old courthouse, the one known as the District. Have you been following this? Well, this week, The JEA Board of Directors, which owns this piece of land on the South Bank, voted to sell the parcel directly to a company known as Elements Development of Jacksonville. It's run by developer Peter Rummel. Now, what this means is the land sale reverts to the original terms that were originally thrown out years ago. The developers now have until mid-July to find enough investors to try to get this thing going. This whole project has gone back and forth for years. It was originally called Healthy Town. Now it's called The District. It's envisioned as a mixed-use space on the South Bank with apartments, retail, restaurants, bars. And it became controversial last week when an email from Mr. Rummel was published in the Times Union, as Rummel expressed anger that a city council special committee was going to be set up to add additional oversight to this deal. Dan Scanlon.
Well, again, it's part of that diamond necklace that this city could have downtown if everything is developed around it. Maybe it is smarter to bring it back to the original format. Let them find investors, let them buy the land, then the city can start doing some investment, finding some deals that can be made. Because I truly would love to take my wife down to this facility to go hang out on the waterfront, to go eat, visit a friend who lives there, take a river taxi across the river to a new convention center and to a concert venue and to everything else. Wouldn't that be great? And do it before I die.
Right. John McGowan, this district development is one of so many that has sort of been percolating for years that people are sort of watching to see if it moves ahead. Now, with this latest move, it's going back to the original planning stages. So we'll have to see what happens next with it.
Well, development's hard.
Yes.
I think that's one of the we watch these projects and we get very excited about these projects. And it gets a lot of media attention and people talk about it. And then if it doesn't work out, then we're all disappointed. But it happens over and over and over again. And it's not uncommon. We see it at the beach. We've got multiple hotel properties that are on the verge and they go all the way through the planning process. And then the developer runs out of money or something falls apart and it doesn't work out. And I don't think Peter Rummel ran out of money, but I think that it's just a hiccup. In fact, I was perusing Twitter while we were sitting here because I live on Twitter. And Rummel put out a text that said, keep in mind that neither success nor failure is ever final. And that was his tweet this morning.
I think that's a Winston Churchill quote originally. Yeah.
So he's...
success is not final. I'm going to misquote it. So, but you get the gist.
So,
yes.
I mean, I don't think he views the project as dead. They'll find a way to do it and they'll keep moving forward. It may be a delay. It may not be exactly as we originally saw it. But I think the winner in here is actually Anna Broche with what she moved to add a little extra oversight on this. I think she came out a winner on this.
Failure is not fatal. Success is not final. That's it.
Yes.
John Burt.
I think the winner on this is the taxpayers of Jacksonville. Thank God JEA had some common sense and decided to go back to the original deal. I mean, you know, come on, the taxpayers are going to buy this land and give it to
right.
the developers.
They were trying to get the city to kick in millions of dollars, and now that seems to be off the table
The fact of the matter is that Rummel and his partners have been, you know, trying to find money for this thing for over 3 years and haven't been able to do it. That's why they came to the city with this cockamamie idea of having the city buy the land for them. They are underfunded. They haven't found the money. Now they have what? July deadline to do it. And, you know, if you talk to people in the development community, they say this is a 50-50 shot at best. And they're being charitable.
And as one of the old guys here, what about the pollution on the site? Because that was an old power plant. There was an oil tanker set up out there. That's what those large chunks are there and near Bishop Kenny offshore. So there's got to be some stuff underground that's going to be dealt with.
Yeah.
So in other words, if this thing doesn't come to pass, it'll be yet another empty lot.
You know, it was
yet
lucky.
Another dream of exciting activity, foot traffic. dirt turning, new vertical construction that doesn't come to pass.
John, you had a great idea.
It doesn't have to.
Or it could be a park, or it could be a boat slip. There are a lot of things you could do with that piece of land.
Yeah, and you know what's going to happen if this doesn't, if this district plan falls down and crashes. You know, the JEA will put it out to bid again and seek more investors, maybe with different ideas, different ways to approach it. You know, and that's, here we are back at the convention center debate again. If you can't find the investors who think they're going to make money off the district is not coming out of the ground, period.
Well, I think the thing is, and the larger debate is, what is the role of government in this? Because... And that was kind of what the shutdown and what happened with JEA and this entire debate is, if this can't succeed on its own, is it the role of government to step in and find ways to help fund that for the greater good of the city? Or are we, or is the city supposed to just let business be business and operate on its own? And it's a philosophy. And I think the reality is that there's a middle ground in there where the city has to find a way to help enable it and make it as easy as possible without funding the entire project exclusively and being a developer on their own.
Well, those who have lived in the beaches a long time remember that at one point there was a little civic auditorium down there and a city hall, and now it's a park and retail. It's making money, or it's a nice place to go walk. John's idea earlier was, why not turn this into a park and then we can develop it at some point? And it would be nice to put some baseball fields there, maybe a small band shell or something, and suddenly make it a community location for St. Nicholas and San Marco, which they don't have a lot of.
Anything would be better than what it currently is, mm-hmm, right, which is unused riverfront property.
Or actually a place where a Navy chopper that had an accident found in a safe place to land a few years ago.
Oh, I remember
that.
Yeah. All right, Jason is in San Marco. Hey, Jason, thanks for holding. Go ahead. What are your thoughts?
Good morning. I always love your show, and I'm glad I've had a little bit more time this week to listen and call in. Yeah, this is great. I love the conversation. Everything you're saying is correct. I'll be to the point. This RFP was agreed to over 1,000 days ago. And if you go back and look through the public record, as reported in the Jacksonville Business Journal, they asked for 1 year to close, and then for due diligence, pardon me, and then an additional 3 months to close. They have failed, and in honesty, the JEA board has failed. Whenever you do a contract like this, you ask for some type of proof of funds, or you don't go forward, whether you're selling a house or a big commercial parcel. So to be 1,000 days down the road, there's failure on everyone's part, not the taxpayers, mind you, but on both the developers and the board at JEA. So everything you're saying is spot on. And to give them another extension is even more foolhardy. Now we have wasted over 3 years. It'll be coming up on 4 years since they agreed to let Rummel and his team develop this property, and it's been sitting there. This is another shame. It's mirrored by the Berkman II across the river, and these are black eyes on our beautiful downtown. I have lived in West Palm. I've lived all over Florida, and I've traveled extensively. Most of the gorgeous riverfront parcels throughout this state are beautiful and are a compliment to the city and its leadership, and ours are not. Thank you for letting me state that.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Okay. What about Jason's points? And what about the criticism others have raised about this deal, given that public monies were to be involved and how little transparency, quite frankly, there has been in terms of the public getting a look at the numbers around this deal?
Well, yeah. I mean, that was kind of like the backstory to this part of the deal falling apart, was that, you know, Rummel is a kingmaker. He's a political heavyweight in town. He's a big donor to Lenny Curry's, you know, and here he is, you know, on the brink of getting this sweetheart deal of having taxpayers buy his land for him. Yeah, that was certainly part of the discussion at City Hall. Schellenberg, the Councilman Schellenberg, was making that point repeatedly. You know, look, there hasn't been much transparency. This thing has dragged on, as the caller said, for almost 4 years now. And people keep going, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? And then suddenly this deal gets cooked up out of nowhere. You know, hey, Let's do it right. Let's do it above board. Let's do what makes sense.
Well,
and, you know, and stop the shenanigans.
And some of those members of that committee are quite happy that it's gone back to basics now, because there's absolutely no risk to the city until there's actually something on the table.
Hmm. So here's an email from James. The two things we most need to get downtown going are residents and desterilization. A convention center is not going to bring either to downtown. By desterilization, I mean make downtown walkable and human-focused at street level. All right, let's take one more call, then we'll move on. Mary is in San Marco. Go ahead, Mary.
Oh, so I was thinking about two things.
Yes.
Having river cruises begin and end there, ecological river cruises. And
sure.
And also a botanical garden.
Oh, I love that idea. Yeah, okay. Thanks for those ideas. There, you know, some attraction on the river, and there are no shortage of good ideas, would be great, but there's just no agreement on what it should be and no money, at least not yet, to put it together. Other than the USS Adams, I think that is moving forward.
Yeah, that's going to go. And, you know, hats off to the supporters of the Adams who have worked diligently for years to make that happen.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the St. John's Riverkeeper does have a river cruise that does happen semi-annually.
They do.
It tends to focus more on the Palatka end of the river, where there's some beauty and some history. And I know, having ridden with Marine Patrol in this chunk of the river, there is a lot of history here, but maybe it's just not natural. It's more architectural and archaeological.
All right. And it's 549-2937 to join the Friday Roundtable with John Byrd, John McGowan, Dan Scanlon, and me. And did you see this news? Everybody knew it was a big long shot, but yesterday it became official. Jacksonville is out of the running to be the home of Amazon's second headquarters. In fact, Miami is the only city in Florida that made the cut to be in the top 20. Now, Jacksonville, of course, was one of many cities that submitted a proposal to Amazon. We were going to give Amazon the shipyard's property for free, along with a massive deal of infrastructure improvements. It was everything we could think of to lure Amazon. The Seattle-based company plans to invest $5 billion in its new headquarters and could employ as many as 50,000 people in the city it chooses, and very good paying jobs with these new gigs. Cities are in fierce competition to lure Amazon, and the company received over 200 proposals. If you're curious, here are the top 20 cities: Atlanta, Austin, Boston, Chicago, Columbus, Ohio, Dallas, Denver, Indianapolis, LA, Miami, Montgomery County, Maryland, Nashville, Newark, New Jersey. What the heck is that all about?
Be nice about New Jersey.
New York City, Northern Virginia, Philly, Pittsburgh, and Raleigh, North Carolina.
And Toronto and Washington, D.C.
Yes. Sorry. Oh, yes. I missed those last two on the next page. So we didn't make the cut.
Well.
Darn it.
Well, you know, that's nothing to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing to be ashamed of. Lots of cities didn't make it.
You know, hey, I. Did you really think we were going to make the cut?
No, not really. I mean, as we've been discussing, we can't even get these developments built on the river. So it's not surprising that we didn't get Amazon.
Governor Scott did tweet yesterday that he says he's very happy about Miami being in the running, obviously, with the cheap labor and the warm temperatures being a plus. Mm-hmm. So come on down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wish, you know, if Amazon had put us in, and if we'd actually gotten the thing, it would have been great for Amazon. It would have been great for the city of Jacksonville. We could have done it. We could have supported it. It would have worked here. But, you know, hey, it wasn't to be.
Well, you miss the shots you don't take. And I got to tell you, the Curry administration mm-hmm. stepped up.
They gave it a good shot. They did.
And, you know, we have the Jaguars because at some point somebody said, hey, we're going to take a swing for an NFL team. And everybody's like, we're not going to get that. And we've taken swings for the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
Oh, look, we got the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
We've got a lot of great things that happened in the city, and sometimes you're going to get them, and sometimes you're not.
Right.
And I know the Curry administration got a lot of criticism for what they thought was an overambitious proposal, but had they got it, can you imagine how the city would have reacted if we ended up with
Amazon?
No, that's
a very good point, John.
It would have been historic and would have propelled this city for decades to come.
You know, that's a very good point, and I appreciate that point. And on this program, even sometimes we fall into the rut of being too negative. So thank you for that.
But you know, we tried once to get the Mercedes-Benz Sprinter plant. We didn't.
Right.
And then that fell before the city that got it. But in the process, we got an expanded Mercedes-Benz facility and an expanded Toyota JoyServe facility. So right. We have some good economic attempts that have come to fruition.
And we've got, what, two Amazon distribution centers here? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Amazon hasn't forgotten Jacksonville, Florida.
David is in Ponte Vedra. Hi, David. How are you? Are you staying warm out there?
Yes, it's really nice. Great living at the beach.
Good.
Real quick, two things. The Berkman Plaza 2, please tell me how they're going to either complete it or get rid of it, because I can't believe it's been there so long, and I know they have problems with it. And don't forget that Apple is now looking for another new home for about a $30 million investment and 20,000 jobs or whatever I heard the other day. So let's try to get Apple here. And tell me about the Berkman, too, and I'll listen on the phone.
Yes, the Beirut Berkman, as some naysayers have called it around town. It's been sitting there half constructed for many years, since the recession.
Right.
It stopped being built at that
Well, the parking
point.
Garage collapsed next door
to
it.
And the garage collapsed.
A lot of
That's right.
litigation
right.
over that. So
yeah.
that got halted
and that,
right there.
And that killed it, yeah.
Yeah. It's just been in limbo for so long.
Yeah, I mean, you can go ask the DIA every once in a while what's going on, and they'll give you these opaque answers like, well, you know, we're in discussions and, you know, something might come about, you know, but nothing's happening.
Yeah, I'm Googling it as we speak. I'll get you an answer here as I take another call. Jo Lynn in Oak Leaf. Jo Lynn, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say maybe like a children's museum, like a STEM museum would be great downtown since we're not getting any shopping or more eateries downtown. I think that maybe a children's STEM museum would be great.
Yes, you know, and there's a new children's museum going up actually in St. Augustine, which is sure to be a nice attraction for that city.
Absolutely.
That's an interesting idea as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And here's an update for you on Berkman Plaza. As one of you guys pointed out, in 2007, when the parking garage collapsed and killed a construction worker, Choate Construction of Atlanta took possession. They've got this piece of crumbling real estate on their books, and they have been looking for a suitable purchaser. Since 2007, City Councilman Reggie Gaffney is hoping to resolve the issue. He told the Florida Times Union that. Either finding someone to buy the site or to raise it. That's something that has been discussed over the last year, but no decision yet. All right.
Development's hard.
Yes, it is.
I mean, I said that earlier and I'll say it again. Development's hard. And it's a very visible failure. If people watch it, and if it doesn't complete the way people think it's going to complete, and you watch it and it stalls out, everybody's watching you.
But there is hope, because the condos on Goodby's Lake that stood empty because of bankruptcy, partially completed, ended up getting bought and rebuilt. I'm still concerned, obviously, what happens when you have rebar exposed to the Florida weather for a few years. I doubt Berkman, too, is going to be able to be rebuilt. It's been exposed to the elements too long.
Yeah. All right. Also this week, the city of Jacksonville took another step in suing pharmaceutical companies for their alleged part in our city's and the nation's opioid crisis. City Councilman Bill Gulliford announced Wednesday the city has selected law firm Scott & Scott to represent it in litigation against pharmaceutical manufacturers and distributors. Now, through this lawsuit, the city hopes to recoup the cost that opioid addiction has caused local government. Jacksonville is following the lead of several other cities around the country in suing big pharma. It's not unlike the way 20 some years ago, cities and states took on big tobacco over the cost of lung disease other cancers associated with tobacco use.
Yeah, it's a good idea. And actually, it's over 200 cities have sued pharma, Purdue, and all the others who started with the OxyContin. I think that's a good thing for the city to do. And we'll see. I mean, if we get some money out of it, I hope we can put it towards treatment or somehow battling this thing. I mean, I you know, what is it? There's more than a person a day in Jacksonville who dies of
heroin. The medical examiner, Dr. Rao, she told me earlier this year on this program that they cannot keep pace with the bodies that mm-hmm. come in every day to the morgue. It's unbelievable.
She has told me that literally she is and her staff, I think there's six there, are literally working their tails off to handle that. As the Times mm-hmm. Union police reporter, I can tell you the sheriff has told me that their gang squad is dealing with drugs, is dealing with these crews out there, and how many of the homicides that I cover are probably spats over gangs and drugs, period.
Well, that's right.
75% to 80%. That's what I've always heard.
But I'm not sure that this is going to fix anything. And I wonder if we're just doing something to act like we're doing something, because I don't know what the solution is going to be. People still are going to deal with chronic pain. People are still going to have medicine. People are, you know, I have chronic pain. I have medicine.
Let me ask you this. What if, it could take years, but what if the city is successful in getting, let's say, several million dollars to go toward this program that Dr. Palm, he's the addiction specialist in the city. He started a pilot program to try to help people who are addicted to opiates transition off these drugs so that they don't die, or so that they don't neglect their kids who then get sent to foster care or whatever, you know, so that there's a way to help people who are addicted so that they're not overdosing or going to jail. I mean, I think that's the intent anyway.
And I understand that, but you've got to stop it at the source. And I think what I've seen is that I have chronic pain, and I prescribe these things, and I went and had to get my latest prescription, and I could only get 7 days worth. Because that's the new, you know, the regulations have changed in the past 6 months. I kind of keep it as an emergency. I take one pill every couple of weeks when I can't get out of bed. But I can only get 7 days worth, where before I was getting a 30-day supply. And that's going to be kind of how you control it, is you take out the excess and you catch it on the front end. And there is a legitimate, you know, obviously you need to treat, and treatment of addictions and mental health and all these other things that we don't do as a society have to be addressed. I don't know. I'm curious if we're trying to look for a silver bullet here to fix something that, and we've got to look at all sides.
But you still have pill mills out there. You still have local and federal prosecution of pharmacies and doctors who are letting prescriptions go by. You still have people who are getting false prescriptions filled for drugs that they use. They tried to limit the antihistamines that are used to make meth, and it stopped it for a while. But guess what? We still have meth labs out there. In fact, we have more than we did, because people are finding a way around.
Well, you know, and we've got heroin pouring into the country. Mm-hmm. It's cheap. It's cheaper than it's ever been on the street. You got this new element, fentanyl that's coming in from Asia, China, and other places. That's a synthetic opioid, extremely cheap, extremely powerful, and is killing people every day.
Let's go to Chuck at the beaches. Chuck, what are your thoughts about this?
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. I want to mention to your guests and Melissa, I remember when we had the event that you had at your facility, there was a gentleman there and he was speaking, and his son had overdosed in a bathroom. And the studies are that most people find bathrooms to go in to do their heroin, et cetera. I have in my hand a product. It's called Narcan nasal spray. You can buy it and purchase it at CVS. You don't have to have a prescription. And if you happen to walk into a bathroom and there's someone with a needle in their arm and they're overdosed, you can use the Narcan spray to put it in their nose to bring them out of the situation that they're in. And so I went to Narcan meetings for 10 years with hundreds of families that are dealing with this, and I have a hard time imagining that you and the people there don't understand or know someone dealing with this. So if you're dealing with it, you can get the Narcan. It's called Narcan nasal spray. I just got it yesterday, and you can get it, and you can have it, and you can have it in your facility. You can have it with you, and if you find someone in your bathroom and they got a needle stuck in their arm and they're overdosed, like the gentleman that was at your facility, you've got something to bring them out of it until 911 can get there. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for that. Wait a minute, Chuck. Thank you for providing that info. Okay. But before you hang up, what are your thoughts about the city council suing Big Pharma?
Well, my thoughts on that is that this has been going on for 10 or 15 years. The pharmaceutical industries promoted it and pushed it, and they put OxyContin in every kitchen cabinet in America. And the kids got it, and they partied with it. And, you know, your guest was talking earlier about he takes it once in a while. Well, there are people, he may not have an addictive personality, but yes, we need to sue them, and we need to hold them accountable. And the hospitals, the doctors, the pharmaceutical industry, the Obama administration, the Bush administration, our Congress, this is going to be bad news. It's going to be history. It's not good. And yes, we need to sue them, and we need to hold them accountable. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Chuck. So what about that idea, that notion that this should be done, if only to hold this industry accountable for the damage that's been done to so many people?
Well, yeah, that's part of it. But, you know, you also, like with the tobacco suits and awards, you want to see some good come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the first step. If those suits are actually won and damages are won with them, then, you know, take that money and put it into treatment, put it into, I'm not an expert on this, but put it into whatever would be effective mm-hmm. in, toward this problem.
Well, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office did start a program last year for early offenders that allowed some who are cleared drug users, drug offenders, to take part in a program that does administer a drug that does help them. And obviously we're seeing more and more prosecutors and judges offering treatment for first-time offenders in lieu of jail time. So if the funding could go to those programs to try to catch the first or second timer before they become a diehard, that's good news if it comes out of a winning lawsuit.
Absolutely.
John McGowan.
I don't have an answer. I mean, it's a broad problem, and I look at it, and to me, it seems like it's got to be something that's going to have to be handled on the state level and on the federal level, and I think that's where the real long-term solution is going to be. But there is a valid point that the cities can just you chip away.
And, you know, that seems to be what Bill Gulliford has been talking about. When he appeared on this program, he said that he was stepping in and that the city council was stepping in because he felt like nobody else was doing anything meaningful. We'll see if it has an effect, but he seemed to be jumping in because he saw a vacuum in terms of somebody trying to attack this problem.
And it's honorable that he wants to do that. And, you know, you see this with a lot of elected officials where they find something and it just strikes them and they feel like they have to use whatever tools available to them to make it better. And it may be outside their scope, but they care enough that they're going to find a way to get it inside their scope so they can do something. And I think that's what Gulliford's doing and the council's doing this. They see a problem. They want to find a solution. And you've got to admire them for mm-hmm. trying to find a solution. I just don't think this is the only solution. And I think there's got to be a lot more to it. And this is just going to be a small chink in the armor.
All right. And it has been a very busy news week and a lively hour. We're going to close, though, finally, with our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state this week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. And this might be the most only in Florida story ever. Only in Florida do you see a python and an alligator locked in mortal combat on, of course, a golf course, right? Did you guys hear about this?
Go Gators.
Yeah, that's right. A foursome was playing at the golf club at Fiddler's Creek in Naples last week when they ran into a little hazard on the 10th hole. The snake was twisted around the gator and the python's tail was in the alligator's mouth. Now, Richard Nadler and his friends took some pictures of the epic battle, but in the most Florida response ever, they just decided to keep playing through.
Mm-hmm.
No big deal, right? Only in Florida does a local bakery send a little jab to a likely Hall of Fame quarterback. On Tuesday, after the Jaguars' big win Sunday over the Steelers, Sinatti's Bakery out in Jacksonville Beach decided to have a little fun and ship 7 turnovers to Ben Roethlisberger. In their 2 losses to the Jags this season, Big Ben turned the ball over 7 times. The apple, blueberry, and cherry turnovers were shipped to Heinz Field this week, and as John McGowan knows, they're delicious.
Yes, they are.
And as John Burr knows, And Dan Scanlon knows Sinatti's. They have delicious baked turnovers and donuts and everything. And so let's end the hour by talking just a little bit about Sunday's game.
Well, let's hope they ship some turnovers up to Foxborough after this game this weekend.
Now, okay? I got to ask you, John Burr, you're kind of a Patriots fan, or you used to be, right?
Well, yeah, I got family all throughout New England.
I know you do.
And I am a Patriots fan. But this week I'm not.
This week you're not.
This week, Jaguars are my team. And I appreciate the excellence that the Patriots have had for the last 15, well, however long Tom Brady's been there. But this week I am just totally Jaguars, and the hell with the Patriots.
Hey, you know, miracles can happen. We got to root for this team. It's exciting to see everybody in town pumped up for this. People are wearing their teal. There are watch parties set up all over town. It's exciting.
And wouldn't it be that the one guy that really kicked A last week, Leonard Fournette, ends up in a three-car accident on 295, and then suddenly all the conspiracy theorists have Bill Belichick being the driver of the car that hit him. The stuff I wrote about it this week, every single tweet and Facebook post was conspiracy theorist about him. Yeah. Poor guy ends up losing the back bumper on a very expensive German car that he drives, and I hope his ankle didn't get hurt, because that was real tough to see last week when he went limping off field.
Well, you know, I'm sorry.
Oh. I'm glad. I think it's just nice to see the city unite behind this. I think there's a broader thing here, and it actually shows what we've done and what sports can do for this community. Mm-hmm. And a lot of credit to 20 years ago having the vision and continuing to work, and how the city's rallying behind something.
You know, we talked about all these things today about that would really make Jacksonville a national leader and make us shine. You know, in no small way, if this team can actually pull this off and win two more games this year, that's going to raise the profile of this city like nothing else.
I mean, the mayor said this week, realize we're only one of a handful of teams right now, of cities that are in this final leg. So that's pretty impressive.
It is. It's exciting. So have fun watching the game out there, and say it with me, guys.
Duval!
All right. That's our show. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. 1A's up next. We'll be back Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.